girls. Okay, we're on chapter 8 of The Underneath. I like that this story takes place in Texas. This piney woods forest in far east Texas is wet and steamy. Take a step and your footprint will fill with water. Look up and you'll barely see the sky, only small blue puzzle pieces blocked by the ancient trees. It is hidden, this place, and so are its denizens. Watch out for its sluggish bayous and tumbling creeks. There are oxbows and fins that make small lakes here and there. Beware the vipers, the rattlers and the corals, the copperheads, the venomous crew. Then there are the non-poisonous varieties, the black snakes, the corn snakes, the rat snakes. Even though they are not toxic, they can still pack a bite. In these waters, there are also snapping turtles, box turtles, sawback turtles that have lived here for well over 100 years, old centaurians and bullfrogs whose songs make the needles out of the pines rattle. Crawdads scoop backward in the gumbo-like water of the bayous. But the rulers of these swamp glens are the alligators. They swim just below the surface, the same color as the water, brown-gray. Their backs resemble a floating tree. Nothing scares an alligator, especially the alligators of the Bayou Tartine, the large stream that flows to the west of the Little Sorrowful Creek. It flows through the heart of these forbidden woods. Halfway down the Bayou Tartine, the land drops off in a channel which creates just enough room for a little bayou, the Petite Tartine. It makes a semicircle and rejoins its big sister and all the land between its marshes and swamps and quicksand. Don't go into that land between the Bayou Tartine and its little sister Petite Tartine. Do not step into that shivery place. Do not let it gobble you up. Stay away from the Tartine sisters. Ooh, that sounds a little scary. Garface, from his ratty old picture, first saw the beast while he floated down the Bayou Tartine. He trapped and skinned a lot of animals, beavers, foxes, rabbits, even an occasional skunk. But it was alligators that called to him. It was alligators, the soft skin of their bellies, the piercing beams from their yellow eyes, eyes that looked directly at him. Alligators. When he looked into the eyes of other animals, all he saw was fear and panic. Not so the gators. They feared no one, not a single soul. Garfish cared little for the deer and the wild hogs and raccoons that he shot and killed every day. But the gators were a different matter. Now here he was, just before dawn, just as the light began to weave its way between the limbs of the towering trees, a soggy pre-dawn morning when the air was so wet it felt as though he needed gills to breathe, when the humidity clung to him like a second skin, that gray morning of unbearable sticky stillness. Garface pushed against the pole as he stood in his flat-bottomed boat, a kerosene lantern hanging from the bow. Just as he passed the Petite Tartine, he looked over his shoulder and rubbed his eyes. Had he just seen what he thought he saw? The black rum that he had drank the night before still lingered behind his eyes. The night had been long, too long. Couldn't be, he said out loud. Only place gators grow that big is Africa. He looked back over his shoulder and then grabbed the lantern and held it out over the water. But all he saw was a pair of eddies, twin whirlpools swirling on the glassy surface. He shrugged and dipped his pole again, then shook his head. Only something enormous, sinking fast, could cause whirlpools that far apart. The eddies were at least 100 feet from one to the other. Was there a beast 100 feet long sinking to the bottom of the Bayou Tartine? Garface felt the hair on his arm stand up. The vein in his neck pulsed. The word respect floated in the thick and heavy air surrounding him. Respect buzzed in his ears like 1,000 hungry mosquitoes. He swatted at his face and neck, but couldn't shoo away the hissing sound the word made on his tongue. Respect. He swallowed the word whole and licked his lips. Only a fool would fail to respect a beast like that. Respect. A word he had never had any truck with. Respect. It crawled down his back like a rat. He reached around as if to catch it and then held his empty hand in front of his hideous face. Respect. He wanted it. As he pulled his boat along, a fine mist began to come down, bringing with it a small amount of coolness. I'll be back, he thought, and then he turned toward his tilting house. Yes, I'll be back. This time he said it out loud as if to seal the deal. He shoved the pole into the mud. We are all of us composed of cells. Cells that join together and fuse to make blood and skin and bones. But at the root of all these are needs. Garface's needs were simple. He satisfied them with basic things like food and water and shelter and a nightly bottle of something hard-edged and bitter, gin or vodka or rum, rum that eased him through the night and into the early morning. But as he made his way to the tilting house, he could feel the cells in his body gathering up into a tangled mess of yearning, yearning for something stronger than liquor. Respect. The yearning dug at him, dug into his very core, formed an echo like a fist in his solar plexus, hard and unyielding. But it was an ache he liked. He clung to it. He would get that alligator, the alligator king, or he would die trying. He dug his pole into the thick brown water, and the rain began to fall. Chapter 10. Ranger, that was the hound's name. He loved the calico cat straight away, but he knew he had to alert her to the danger she was in. He pointed out the pelts of foxes and muskrats and mink nailed to the front porch railing, the skins of alligators and rattlesnakes that laid beside them on the slats of the porch. It was Garface, he said, the man who kept this old hound chained. Garface. If he finds you, Ranger said, and he looked over both shoulders, but he couldn't finish. Garface was mean. And then there was the rifle that he carried with him always, the rifle. Ranger knew about the rifle. Long ago, how many years he couldn't say, he had gone along with Garface when he hunted, had run by his side, watched when he aimed the gun and shot the raccoons and the white-tailed deer. And then there was the night, that awful night, when Ranger cornered a bobcat, a beast with glowing eyes. Ranger bayed and bayed his victory song, but just as Garface aimed at the cat, had the creature in his crosshairs, Ranger sensed that something was wrong. He moved, and Garface shot Ranger instead. There had been no apologies on the part of the man, just a swift kick in the side from his steel-toed boot, a kick that burned as hot as the bullet lodged in his leg. You stupid dog, the man snarled. Then he left Ranger and staggered home, leaving the dog to limp after him, and later chained him to the post, useful only as an alarm, as a hound who bayed when animals came too close. A dog trapped in a 20-foot circle. That's what Ranger had become. Nothing more. The wound in his leg eventually closed, but the bullet was still lodged there. A daily reminder, yes, but it wasn't the bullet so much as the chain that ate into him. The chain that bound him to the porch post and bound him to the man. Ranger knew that a small cat would be doomed in the hands of Garface. He might use her for target practice with his old rifle, the one he kept strapped across his back. He might use her as alligator bait, tie her to a rope, and set her by the water, by the swamp, where the alligators floated unseen just below the surface of the brown, stagnant water of the Bayou Tartine. Alligators who would snap a small cat in half with a single bite. Garface might do anything. "But I have nowhere else to go," said the Calico Cat. And even though Ranger knew he should make her leave, he also knew that after so many years of being alone, of being chained to the post, he couldn't stand the thought of her going. He shook his head so that his long ears flapped against both sides of his neck. "Then you must keep out of the sight of Garface," he said. And together they curled up in the dark space beneath the porch, the underneath, the dark and holy underneath. Whenever there is a breeze in the old forest, you might for a moment realize that the trees are singing. There on the wind are the voices of sugarberry and juniper and maple, all telling you about this hound, this true blue hound tied to a post. They've been watching him all these years, listening to his song, and if he knew what the trees were singing, it might be about how he found a friend. Chapter 11. It takes a long time for a 100-foot alligator to grow. In this forgotten forest, one year turns into another until centuries have passed. No one keeps records, no one but the trees. They don't count time in years. If they did, perhaps 1,000 might have passed, maybe more, since the day the alligator emerged from his leathery egg, no longer than a man's thumb, smaller than that. He could have become a snack for an egret or an osprey or a bald eagle. He could have been swallowed up by a larger gator. This is what happened to most of his sisters and brothers. But he was swift and cagey. From the start, he discovered all the underwater caves. He found the darkest shadows for hiding from the sharp beaks of the large birds and herons and cranes. He avoided the other gators, the large ones, the small ones, even his own family. When he was small, he dined on insects, the mosquitoes and the dragonflies that landed on the water's surface. Later, he found minnows and tadpoles. As the long years passed, he grew and grew, and so did his prey. He became adept at hunting all the water creatures, but he was also nimble on the soft, marshy ground where he lurked in the mud, camouflaged by his thick and bumpy brownish-green skin, the same shades as the water and the boggy land around it. Soon he feasted on marsh rabbits and squirrels and beavers and mink. His patience was unlimited, and his sense of smell was sharp. He knew when an animal was weak or injured, and he waited for it, tracked it down, and struck. Death was swift, for he did not bandy about in torture. He simply grabbed the victim by the throat, snapped its neck, and dragged it into the brown water. Then he spun it once, twice, three times, and carried it to the bottom of the thick bayou and held it there. Later, the body waterlogged, the alligator king finished it off. Afterward, he floated just beneath the surface of the water and napped until it was time to dine again. An unsuspecting animal could become his dinner. A deer, a pike, a fox. He was not discerning. Any animal, large or small, made a meal. He was the master of disguise, and he knew how to avoid the quicksand. He had watched many creatures sink out of sight into those shivery sands, but if they made it across the sand, or if they somehow got free, he was there, waiting for his sharp teeth and his powerful jaws. Waiting. Can an alligator live for 1,000 years? Maybe more? Who's to say? And why not, in this deep, dark forest, this hidden from view forest? The gator is not the only ancient being. Certainly there are trees here that have stood for longer. They are the ones who know the histories of all the species. If a tree can live for 1,000 years or more, why not an alligator? Before the man spotted him, only a few knew that the marshy land between the Bayou Tartine and the Petite Tartine was the secret lair of the Alligator King. Only the other alligators in the trees and the birds that flew overhead. And one other. The one who was trapped in the beautiful jar beneath the tall and dying loblolly pine. The Alligator King blinked his golden eyes and whispered, "Soon, my sister, your time will come." Then he sank beneath the muddy water. Alone in her silent cell, Grandmother blinks. Perhaps the Alligator King is 1,000 years old, but she, the creature in the jar, is older than that. Much. Chapter 12. Give us a bloodhound, a hound who is bred for the chase, for the hunt, for the full round moon to bay at. That's what Ranger was, a bloodhound. This breed is known for their acute sense of smell. They can hold their noses to the ground and find the toddler who has strayed from his back door, locate the fireman beneath the smoldering crumble of a building, discover the horse that has escaped from its pen. Yes, the bloodhound is known for his sense of smell, but some, like Ranger, also have a keen sense of hearing. A dog who has been tied to the same place for so many years is familiar with all the sounds around him. He knew the chirring of the cicadas, the peeping of the tree frogs, the creak of the restless pines rooted into the dark red clay. He could identify the throaty growl of a mother raccoon when her cubs wandered too far astray, and he knew the invisible whoosh of the great horned owl that slipped across the night sky right at dusk. He was also acutely aware of the sound of the old pickup as it rambled away from the yard in the evenings and again when it moved toward the house the next morning. Once he heard the engine's rumble in the distance, he knew exactly how long it would take for the truck to appear in the yard and how long he had to make sure that the calico was safely tucked beneath the house before Garface stepped out of the cab, the door squeaking open and then slamming shut. He knew the crack of the horrible rifle and the way the bullets split the humid air. These were familiar sounds to Ranger, but now there was a new sound in his ears, a soft, low, fluttery sound. Anyone who knows a cat can recognize it, a purr. Cats are famous for purring, and this is what the calico cat did as she curled up next to Ranger's massive chest, safe and soft. Until he heard it, Ranger had not realized how much he needed this sweet, friendly sound, and how much he needed someone to settle in next to him. He didn't know that he needed to not to be solitary until at least he wasn't. So many needs in one old dog. And while the calico purred into his ears, he realized he had another need to tell a story. As it turns out, loneliness makes a well for stories, and now that Ranger was no longer alone, his stories began to bubble up. As the calico listened, Ranger told her all about when he was a puppy, when his mother taught him how to pull his nose to the ground and how to follow the scent, how to bay at the moon's full face. That was before Garface took him. "But you had those good times to remember," said the cat. "Yes," he replied, with a deep heave of his chest. "He did have those good times." Then she told him of her own good times when she was a kitten with her brothers and sisters. All the games they played. Silly games. Kitten games. That was before she was taken to the pound. Before she was forsaken by her family in town and left on the side of the road. That was before she met Ranger. She licked the hound's silky ears. He loved this, loved to have his ears washed by this small cat. "I had those good times to remember, too," she added. And then she settled in next to him close. They had these good times to remember, but the best was yet to come. Kittens. They arrived on the moonlit night. The calico cat gave birth as she lay right against Stranger's chest. She listened to his steady heartbeat as one after the other she delivered two beautiful babies, one boy and one girl. She was astonished at their identical sameness, two kittens exactly alike, silver from head to toe, silver like the stars that peeked down through the night sky, the same. But then she looked again and looked at the boy cat. On his forehead was a tiny white patch of fur just above his eyes, a small crescent moon. Yes, her little boy cat bore the moon's own mark. And then she looked at her little girl kitten, small and round, and smiled. But Calico knew that a kitten born in the presence of a hound was rare. Surely, she thought, this will hold them in good stead, and this will give them courage. Alas, these kittens will need it. At first they were so tiny, no larger than Ranger's big toes, not quite that large, and all they did was offer up some soft, almost imperceptible mews. For days they stayed tucked beneath their mama, attached to her milky belly. To Ranger they were just mews and milk, so small he barely noticed them. But kittens grow fast. Mewing and milk were only temporary. Soon enough, they opened their eyes and began to venture away from the calico cat. At first, they wobbled, and then they tottered, and before they knew, they were the size of Ranger's nose. They climbed. And what did they climb? Or rather, who did they climb? Ranger. They dug their tiny little claws into his coppery red fur. No father has ever been prouder of his brood. Ranger watched over his cat family like the pharaohs watched over the Nile, like the stars watched over the sleeping earth, and like the beach watched over the sea. He never took his eyes off of them, sleeping only when they slept, eating only when they ate, and what he loved most, to hear their purrs. There was nothing finer. That's it for tonight, girls. Love ya.